Good morning and welcome to Tuesday's June 1st agenda for the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Natural Resources Subcommittee. Today we have House Bill 5057, Department of Higher Education Statewide Public Services. Lest there be a shudder of trepidation through the entire building, this is not the Department of Higher Education's entire budget bill. This is, otherwise, this room wouldn't be big enough. Attention in this hearing would be a great deal greater than it will be, I think, this morning. But what we do have today is a whole list of co-chairs' objectives to reach, and I'll let our able committee staff detail for you what it is that we're about to hear this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House Bill 5057 is the bill that's being used to fund the Oregon State University's statewide public services budget. Those are the budgets of the Agricultural Experiment Station, the Extension Service, and the Forest Research Laboratory. The bill is blank as it is now. It's one of these blank Ways and Means bills. But it's being used as a vehicle, and I would refer you to the House Bill 5057-2 amendments, which have been distributed to you. These amendments govern stuff the original bill to insert the language funding the statewide public service functions under the Department of Higher Education, and together appropriate a little over $93 million in general fund for these purposes. Before I get into a little more detail, I would like to refer to another bill that has been introduced this session that I know many of you are familiar with. That is Senate Bill 413. Senate Bill 413 is a bill that would provide new research initiatives for the three statewide public services. Actually, most of those, or many of those initiatives, are incorporated within the House Bill 5057-2 amendments, which would fund both the base budget of the statewide public services plus the enhancements that the co-chairs have identified as being within what they can fund in this biennium budget. The document that I would like to refer to most would be this two-page table here that's labeled House Bill 5057-2 OSU Statewide Public Services Budget. This gives some detail as to the numbers that are contained in the -2 amendments. Let me start by saying that all of these numbers are just the general fund portion of the budget. I will speak briefly at the end of this as to the other fund numbers that are in these budgets. But these are all the general fund amounts. Looking at what the governor had recommended for the statewide public services, you can see on the top row those numbers there. The governor recommended a current service level budget with one enhancement in that. And LFO is recommending that you deny that one enhancement that was in the governor's recommended budget. It's a roll-up of a classified top step compensation that was awarded two biennia ago under the provisions of Senate Bill 271, the Higher Education Efficiency Act. These funds for this top step compensation have already been removed by the legislature in the Department of Higher Education's education in general, let's say their main education budget. And this removes those components of that top step compensation that are in the statewide public service budgets as well. So we would recommend that you deny that roll-up of classified top-step compensation, which would essentially start you with a current service level budget. Then the co-chairs are accommodating a number of enhancements.
Question.
Before we get to the enhancements, what is the on-the-ground impact of denying the roll-up in terms of the budget of OSU?
What this particular package would have given them, if you do approve it and do not deny it, is it would shift part of the cost of funding a salary increase that was implemented, I believe, back in 1996. that they have been paying for currently in this current biennium out of their other fund resources. And it would shift that to general fund, thereby providing them more general fund. It would not affect the compensation levels of employees of the public services.
So, Mr. Chair, just to follow up. So the recommended $300,000-$400,000 then would be removed from general fund?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
The House Bill 5057-2 amendments also accommodate the enhancements above the current service level that you see outlined in this document here. In total, they represent, let me start with the bottom line before going to the details. In total, they represent almost $13 million in enhancements over the current service level. The entire package is $13 million, but there's a small component, $150,000, which has been added to House Bill 5057 for the Department of Education. This is funding for Future Farmers of America and the Forestry Club. And that particular component is in House Bill 5017, and I would not have even included that at all in this table. In some sense, there's really no reason to, but I do know that this is just to show the entire size of the package, which is $13 million. The part that is actually funded in these amendments is the remainder, which is $12,850,000, or an $8.2 million increase for the Agricultural Experiment Station, a $3,650,000 increase for the Extension Service, and a $1 million increase for the Forest Research Lab, all of these increases being increases over the current service level.
Mr. Chairman? Question? It's my understanding that if we don't approve this $150,000, for the leadership, future leadership session, that they're going to be about $150,000 short of current service level. Is that correct?
That's not my understanding.
No, my understanding is that it's $150,000 that would have been in this package for that specific purpose. Was entered in another.
But there's still about $150,000. They were $300,000 short.
They added that back in the other budget. Well, we're still $150,000 short.
Yeah, I guess I'm not tracking on that. I knew that we were going to put $150,000 in, but I assumed that the $150,000 was all that they were needing.
Okay, so we now have this $150,000 in here?
The $150,000 that I'm referring to was moved to another budget. And what is the other budget that went into?
It's the Department of Education grant and aid budget, mm-hmm. which will be, which is out of Education Subcommittee and will be before full ways of moving on Friday.
5017. Could we get to find that out if they're still short
$150,000? I'll help you check that.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay. Again, looking at the table here, you can see the enhancement funding that is approved here by the co-chairs, and it includes many of the items, or I think all of the items that were in Senate Bill 413, though generally the full amount that was originally requested by Ag Experiment Station, Extension Service, and Forest Research Lab. Are not able to be totally accommodated because of budget concerns, but a total of, as I mentioned, $12,850,000 is. I'd be happy to, I don't know, Mr. Chair, if it makes much sense to go through all of these. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them. The three deans who head the three public services are here in the audience as well, and they probably would be a very good resource in most cases to get further explanation of how these funds would be used in particular areas.
We have the three chairs there at the podium, and the three wise people are here. Let's bring them forward, and we'll go briefly over some of these implications.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ever there was a case of a rose between two thorns.
We did that on purpose.
would like to begin?
It's just the opposite in the committee meeting.
It is, actually.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Clayne Dustin. I'm Dean of the College of Agricultural Sciences and Director of the Agricultural Experiment Station. Essentially, as you notice, the items that are outlined for the enhancements to the Agricultural Experiment Station, a good share of those were ones that we had proposed to higher education, to the Board of Higher Education, were approved by the Board of Higher Education and sent on to the Governor's office. The Governor's office didn't include those items, and so those items were included in Senate Bill 413. There are some additional items that were added to Senate Bill 413 in addition to those that we had submitted through the Chancellor's office and the Board of Higher Education. And some of those items appear here at the bottom of the list. So essentially what you see here is a combination of the original amounts submitted to the Chancellor's office plus some additional items that various segments of the agricultural industry wanted some additional research for. And the amounts that are there are less than the amounts that were requested in almost every case, but as we all know, that Senate Bill 413 got to be $22 million and for the three statewide agencies, and what you see here is bringing that back down to the 1250.
So what we have here is what essentially survived all of the other budget considerations.
Okay. Any questions?
Senator George.
Mr. Chairman. One of the pieces, I believe, was in 413 was the chief research section. This is an industry in Oregon that's under tremendous economic stress right now. That has been eliminated, it appears, right now. Is that the case?
I don't see it, Senator.
And there were some other items that were in 413 that didn't appear here as well.
Mr. Chair, we had a total of almost $7 million, or actually it was closer to $9 million enhancements that were not included in this.
I'm about to, Mr. Chairman, I'm a little bit disturbed about the fact that, I mean, I see some of the industries in agriculture that are doing extremely well, very profitable at this time. We're seeing very large numbers, and then industries that are very much under pressure, I mean, trying in a survival mode, that have either been diminished or completely whacked out. So I hope we can take a look at maybe doing a little bit of adjustment here.
We can consider anything, Senator. We have lots of, if you've got some sectors that are making any money in the ag natural resources, go ahead like a list.
Oh, and I said few, you know, very few.
Yeah.
It's for the blood.
Shall we move along? Senator Corbin?
One quick question. Could you take a stab at the question I asked Mr. Bender earlier regarding the roll-up of classified top-step compensation? You're going to pay for that through other funds. What impact does that have on any services?
Senator Cochran, Mr. Chair, the $221,000 that will pay for the top step compensation will come out of other funds for paying those people who are doing work on some of those grants, contracts, some of those other activities. And it's sort of as though you have two checkbooks, and both of those checkbooks go together, pay your employees. Well, if you don't have it in one checkbook, you have to take it out of the other. And it cuts down the flexibility of use of those funds, although what is listed here essentially puts us at the same level as what happened for the rest of higher education. So I believe I'm correct. Is that correct, Mr. Bender? So essentially, if you funded this, it would be funding the statewide agencies differently than the rest of higher education laws for these items.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm confused. I know it's a co-chair's decision, but maybe you could explain it or somebody could. We've got higher ed separated off in, 95? And they're like 9% behind market now in terms of trying to keep classified as well. I mean, the problems with keeping professors is sort of bigger and more well-known news, but they're also behind in the with classifieds, and I'm not sure what you have 13 million in enhancements on one side, and then you have cuts in general fund to classified on the other. I was just kind of curious how that treated that move.
I think the cuts in the general or the shifts from other to general have to do more with fungibility than whether or not it will directly affect the compensation package for that.
Mm-hmm.
For the folks that were referring to here.
I was just kind of curious what they would be taking. You always, you're losing that out of your checkbook in other funds. What would those other funds have been used for?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cochran, essentially part of the problem, and that same problem is there for the rest of higher education, essentially if you have an increase, a mandated increase for employees, and on your other funds, if there is no increase that comes along to take care of that. For example, if we have, say, federal funds, and we have a flat level of federal funding over a number of years, well, those employees that are on those federal funds, since those federal funds come in and pay for people who are working on the state level, and so they have to maintain the same level as everyone else. So essentially we're mandated to give those people a raise, even though those federal funds that come in to fund that activity are level. So essentially you have to take that somewhere else out of the system in order to pay for that raise. And if we had an increase in federal funds, then we'd be okay. But most of the time, those grants come in and they're level.
Thank you.
Other questions? Shall we move along?
Chair Ferrioli and members of the committee, I'm Lila Hoaglin, the Dean and Director of the Extension Service. Again, just to repeat some of what Thane said, the budget enhancements that you have here were put together through a process of identifying priorities for the people of Oregon across the state. They were submitted in a budget proposal to the Board of Higher Education and to the Chancellor's Office, approved at that level, and then moved on to the Governor's Office where they were not funded. For the Extension Service, the amount that you have listed here is a little more than half of what was in Senate Bill 413. It's really divided for extension into three broad categories, the first one being watersheds, water quality, and salmon restoration. And by the way, just a reminder of our role in this, the Extension Service's role in this is informal education or non-credit education. So we work on the education side, essentially taking the research from the experiment station, the Forest Research Lab, and other parts of the university out to the people of Oregon who can apply it and use it directly. So our role is the education piece. So there's a section that deals with watersheds and water quality. There's a section that deals with strengthening youth, families, and communities. That particular piece, as you'll see here, primarily focuses on the 4-H Youth Development Program. And then the third piece, which strengthens agriculture and natural resource industries. And a majority of our package in that area in particular does deal with industries in Oregon, ag industries in Oregon, that are really suffering, including the field crops, wheat industry, livestock industries, and so on. So that, just in brief, is what's included here for the Extension Service. And again, I'd be happy to respond to any questions that you might have about the items that you see here.
Questions? Hearing none, shall we move along?
Senator Ferrioli, members of the committee, I'm George Brown, Dean of the College of Forestry, Director of the Forest Research Lab.
And like my other two colleagues, our list of enhancements began with our statutory Forest Research Laboratory Advisory Committee before moving through the same chain that Lila and Thane described. In Senate Bill 413, there were $1,500,000 of new programs proposed. This bill shows that back to $1 million. They are in four categories: forest health and productivity, reducing the environmental impact of forest operations, both in timber harvesting and in manufacturing, forest resource forecasting, and Swiss needle cast disease cooperative. That is a cooperative that was formed by the industry 2 years ago to deal with Swiss needle cast, and that was an add-on originally at $400,000 rather than $250,000, as you see here, an add-on, I think, requested by the forest industry. I'd be pleased to answer any questions you may have.
Questions? The Swiss needle cast has been something that's been relatively recently recognized as a serious problem. Do you know, do we have an idea about what the trend is, the conditions?
Senator Farioli, the trend is upward. In fact, our faculty have told me that they have now discovered outbreaks of Swiss needle cast in Douglas fir on the Western Cascades. Heretofore, it has been confined to the Coast Range. We have a research cooperative that was formed with landowners 2 years ago. I think the current estimate is 175,000 acres in the Coast Range that have been infected with this fungus. I don't think yet there is an accurate survey in the Western Cascades, but it is very serious. Essentially, the disease does not kill the tree, but really impedes its growth. The second and third year needles are attacked and become non-functional in terms of producing photosynthetic material for the life of the tree. It hits all stand ages. We thought at first it was just in young plantations, but as we've done more intensive surveys, state forestry and the industry have, it's been found in plantations and in forests of all ages.
And how widespread geographically? I mean, is it confined to a geographic area?
At first it was thought to be confined pretty much to the west slopes of the Coast Range, with the greatest intensity being in the fog belt. And primarily in Douglas fir, but it stretches all the way from Astoria down to Coos Bay. 175,000 acres is a fair amount.
And is it a coastal phenomenon, or is it all elevations?
Yes, it is. It's all elevations, but the more intensive the surveys have shown it much more widespread than originally expected. Originally, it was thought to be only in the fog belt. But now, as I mentioned, they have detected outbreaks of it in the Western Cascades, which is a bit unnerving.
How does it spread?
Probably airborne. Most fungal spores are spread that way.
And the silver research indicated treatment or?
No, it has not, Senator. In fact, that's they've been working very hard on that. There are a number of different possibilities. One is that the trees that are, in fact, affected are basically off-site planted. There may be some kind of genetic linkage here. There may also be some fertility issue with the soil. Another one simply is that we're entering a wet cycle, and for all of a sudden, the higher moisture and humidity levels in these forests now have provided better conditions for its outgrowth. So they're pursuing several different avenues. Right now, there is only one treatment. It's a fungicide which does not have, it can be used in Christmas tree plantations or in ornamental circumstances, but not for general application in the forest.
Entering a wet cycle? Is that what I heard him say? Entering? My Lord. My wife grew up in Cottage Grove, and actually I told, after listening to testimony of Natural Resources on 413, I said we're entering a wet cycle, and she about threw me out of the car.
Well, I have been reading a little of the La Nina press release.
Oh, you wouldn't care, Mr. Chair, where you're from. It doesn't rain. I'm talking about the rusty people here in the valley.
It went from 12 to 13 inches of precipitation on the east side. Yeah.
With all respect to the senator from
the valley. Well, necessary respect for all the beer food.
Well, be independent, right, Senator, of elect cycle on the east side.
Yeah.
We're below normal right now, so let's not be too sensitive about your wet cycles over here.
I guess the representation over here isn't all wet.
When the, we'll see if we can get this back on track. When the Swiss needle cast attacks forest site, what prognosis? Do we just, does it lose the needles and then we lose the tree eventually? Or?
Territorially, yes, indeed, that's what happened. So far, it has not been lethal, but has essentially impeded growth, where you have leader growth in the coast range, often 3 to 5 feet. It's now down to a matter of inches. That's because the second and third year needles affected by the fungus cease to produce photosynthate, and the tree doesn't have the goody it needs to grow.
Long term, without some kind of a breakthrough in research, are we looking at just a loss of significant forest stands?
Probably loss of significant growth in the forest stands at this point, which we know. We have not, I think, had records of long term infestation. That is, where the infestation in a stand has lasted for more than a few years. That's simply because we weren't keeping track of it.
Question?
I was wondering where the index cases might be.
I'm sorry,
where the index cases might be.
Well, they're spread throughout the coast range.
We don't know what first stand is that. We don't know what the first stands were.
No, I don't think so. At least the maps that I have seen just simply show the spread. Of course, those are done with aerial photography, and it's tough to tell sort of where they began. By the time it became noticed, to any degree, it was already probably 100,000 acres or so. So it was very difficult to say where the first ones were. This is a disease that's endemic. It's native. It's not from Switzerland. It's endemic to Oregon. And so there's always some of it about.
And it's a non-lethal. What happens if successive years we've got a kind of a piled up?
That's what I was mentioning a moment ago. We don't have an index of a long enough duration to be able to tell what would happen if it stayed in the stands, let's say, for a decade. We know what happens over the 2 or 3 to 5 year period that we've been monitoring in some of these stands, and it's simply continued reduction in growth. But persistence over a decade or more, we just don't have the record to say. But that's, even that, no growth in the stands is a tremendous economic impact on the landowners.
And it's an airborne pathogen.
As much as we know, yes.
And I guess there are some serious forest health problems on the other side of the state as well, mostly infestations of insects.
Yes, that's correct.
But at least with the insects, you sort of have a little bit better background and kind of know what we're dealing with.
Correct. And we also know more about the ecology of most of the insect pests on the east side and the cycles that they go through as well.
Further questions? Mr. Chairman? Senator,
when we heard this issue before the Ag and Natural Resources Committee, I don't think I've ever had anything that probably bothered me much more than this when it comes to anything in the environment, because the conclusion that anyone was forced to come to was that we have both forests on the east side and the west side in a major decline. And the thing that really bothers me, and I would hope that out of this forest health productivity, I would hope that what would come was what several people have suggested to me, and that is, if in fact we see that these forests are declining, that we need to get into the mode of harvesting that timber while it's still salvageable, and then utilizing the proceeds from the sale of that wood in order to get, you know, whether it's valley pine or whatever on this side, whatever can be replacing those trees,
get back into a productive cycle again, because I've watched in the valley, Whistler needle cast, right on my own property, I've watched trees that once they're infected, as you pointed out, there is no growth. The tree appears to begin to deteriorate overall. You'll see bark characteristics begin to deteriorate, and seems to be very susceptible then to everything else that happens to come along.
Senator, Mr. Chairman, Senator George, that's indeed true. And there is a cycle that will go through of reduced vigor in a tree and opening up them up to insect infestation, for example. And that's one of the things we've seen on the forest of the east side, where the drought there weakened the forest. They were often overstocked, and then subsequently insect infestation came to lay waste to the forest there, mostly on the federal land, because on the federal land, given the policies of the president and the Northwest Forest Plan, there's hardly any harvesting that is allowed there. And in fact, our faculty, together with some faculty in the Ag Experiment Station, at the governor's request, took a look at those forests, made some recommendations for improving forest health. Density management was a big element of that. Harvesting. The governor used that in his 11-point plan for those eastern forests, which I think the Forest Service has essentially ignored.
Okay, thank you.
Well, you heard a little bit of a presentation earlier with the Department of Forestry report, but when you heard the Department of Forestry's budget, but I don't think there's quite this detail. I didn't realize that it was a serious issue.
What's the research designed to determine if this is true?
How will this research move us forward in the questions that we need to answer to deal with the system?
Mr. Chairman, we already have in place a Swiss needle cast research cooperative, and it's funded at about $200,000 to $300,000 a year by a group of cooperating landowners. This additional funding will provide funds to accelerate that research. And as I said, they are pursuing three or four different lines of research to look at the cause and the origins of this disease. And this will hopefully get us there quicker.
And I sense there is a certain urgency here.
Mr. Chairman, there is indeed great urgency, and I think particularly if this is starting to spread to the Western Cascades.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what is the total amount being budgeted or that will be spent for this problem?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Messerly, my guess is that with $125,000 additional per year, it will move the research close to $350,000 to $400,000 per year. That includes the funds that are already being contributed by the cooperatives.
That answer your question, Mr. Messerly?
Well, we have a desire to go into work session, but we lack a couple of folks. So what we're going to do is go into a recess for a few moments, and when we get a quorum back, we'll go into work session. Senator George?
No, go ahead. I was just asking for you.
To delve for a few minutes, if I may, into the fisheries issue.
Let's delve.
And I'm wondering what kind of coordination we have between Fish and Wildlife and the extension folks. If we're going to be spending a lot of money, we need to have some explicit cooperation between Fish and Wildlife and the ecological research, which is $900,000 budget package. The Red Down Trout, $900,000 budget package. I'm just kind of curious where the dialogue is with between Fish and Wildlife and this book.
We could deal with the is it the salmon ecological research that you're
questioning? And mostly that one there, and also the red band trout issue too, Mr. Chair, which is the water quality decisions and the chance to improve it.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Carno, those two items are in the agricultural experiment station, and the work that goes on in Fish and Wildlife Department, some of that is research-oriented, but most of that is management. So essentially, we work with the Department of Fish and Wildlife to help provide some of the research that we do to them that helps them in the management. Now, when you look at the funds that were appropriated in Measure 66, which provides for some of the salmon restoration, and also the funds that were provided last biennium for on-the-ground improvement of riparian areas and changes on the ground, essentially you have our folks, particularly Extension, but also some of our researchers that are continually being asked by the landowners and by those people in the departments, agriculture, DEQ, and Fish and Wildlife, for which direction we should go in the management. So essentially, we have the landowners coming to us and asking us if what is being recommended is scientifically sound. We have the people who are in the agencies asking us which direction they should recommend for management on the ground. So there is a lot of coordination. Sometimes we have to take our existing funds and move to that direction to take care of the requests and the requirements that come to us from not only agencies, but primarily from the landowners, because the landowners are continually asking us what is the right way to go. And they have to spend a lot of their own money in making some of these mitigation changes for salmon and ecology. So that essentially gives you the framework of how we work with the departments. And we have, some of them are adjunct faculty members, some of them even come and teach some of our courses, and we do joint research projects with them as well.
So there is coordination between the two departments?
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Kristen Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I approve this budget, and I approve it of strongly support the extension. Working closely with the landowners and doing more work on facilitating and this type of thing. I guess my question is, would be to the staff and to the chair of the committee, will this program be replacing some of the funding into the ODF&W budget?
My understanding is that this is really targeted on the research portions that need to be done that benefit directly the after research industry sector. So I don't think it's replacing anything that they're doing from ODF&W. In other words, I don't think that these things, just because they have a salmon ecological research component, are the same kinds of research that ODF&W is doing for the benefit of the species. Perhaps you could defer the question to the panel, but
well, Mr. Just a comment. I think Senator Tarnow's line of question is very pertinent. I'm concerned about some of the credibility of the work that's done by ODF&W, and if we can contract with the university and get some of that research work done, I'd be much more comfortable.
To your question, Representative Mitchell, I was more or less addressing the issue of duplication. I don't think this is duplication at all. I think this is a different application. And I agree with you. I think it's good to have the land-grant university that understands the capability of the resources and the natural resource community do as much of this research as possible. It strengthens the institution, and it does have a different application, and the credibility factor is a lot greater. So I agree with you on those three things. But I was just referring to the issue of whether it's duplication. I don't believe that it is duplication.
Chairman, as we look at
Senate Bill 413, one of the issues that we were attempting to get to was is that right now, the natural resource industries are being forced into dealing with brand new environmental realities. And we were saying, do we have the equipment in order to make the changes that are necessary? Do we have people that the natural resource industry will trust the research? In other words, tell us what to do. Is this valid, good science? And what it kept coming back to was the Ag Experiment Station and the Extension Service have that kind of credibility. And the hope was here is that we could provide solid scientific data to the folks in the field in the natural resource industry so that they could meet some of the new demands being placed on them by NIMS and by, Oregon Plan. And in a place in which you feel comfortable with the validity of the science.
Representative Jensen, and before we go to Representative Jensen, Senator George, I agree completely. We've asked natural resource producers to engage in unprecedented change. In order to make the change happen, we've got to allow some capacity. And the place where that capacity happens is in research processes and in direct services to the industry sector. And it's got to be delivered in a way that is adaptive and also is an outreach process. And research tends to move directly from that land-grant university to the ground in a very short period of time. So I think it's most helpful. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, am very supportive of the Oregon State Experiment and Extension Agency budget. And the programs that they have. The one I am concerned, though, as I look through the recommended budget that we are being asked to approve and the initial budget that we looked at for these programs and at the reductions that are present, in a couple of those, I see reductions of almost 50%. I guess the question I have, I assume that you have seen the numbers that we're looking at. Is that correct?
Representative Jensen, Senator Ariola, the amount that is in each of these is something that is fairly new to us in the designation. We essentially have decided that the specific amounts that we are designated for each of these categories, we will have to compare with our original proposal that we sent through the Chancellor's office and determine how much of that remains and where we would put that specifically. For example, if there was an item that has two-thirds of what was originally proposed, we'll probably have to remove one or two positions out of what was originally proposed. For the Agricultural Experiment Station, we have a legislative advisory committee that has been acting and fairly active during this process of prioritizing items that got to this point. We would work back with that group individually to determine what the industry feels is most important relative to what we feel is most likely for us to make a successful return back to the industry. So that combination is really helpful attempt to meet what funding we get compared to the VAT that we propose. So basically at this point, I don't know, and I will have no way of knowing specifically when we take 20% of the wheat and small grains research, where that 20% is going to come, what it's going to come out of.
So that's not designated here. We have yet to determine that.
That is yet to be determined.
That's correct.
Which question
answers,
President?
Yes, but a comment, if I may.
Yes,
sir. Obviously, some of that concerns me. I think probably in the wheat and small grains research, 20% might, be workable, but when we get to
the grass seed research, which is looks like almost 50%, approaching 50%. That's a fairly significant chunk in what I see as a kind of a growing industry, at least on my side of the mountain. And so I have some concerns, I guess, with that, but I do trust that the university and its outreach will do this in the most efficient and effective way possible.
Sam Nessel.
Mr. Chair, I didn't show much stupidity here. I'm having trouble correlating what the staff recommendations are with what the historic and the governor's budget is what we're all at. Am I the only one today that's confused here?
Quite likely, representatively, but what we do is the way these two documents fit together, as it's kind of explained to me, is that the detail that you're looking for of the on page 2 of 8 in the OSU statewide public services document is contained in the two sheets spreadsheet that was given with that document. But I think your question specifically is how do these things connect with the current level of services, and I'll go ahead and defer that question to our committee staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Messerly. This multi-page, eight-page spreadsheet contains the information of how the current service level numbers are calculated, and I'd be happy to go into any detail there that you've got. But if you look at page 1, this shows the calculation of the current service level for all three statewide public services combined. So I've combined all three budgets here. Then on page 3 and 5 and 7, there are the separate ones for each of the three statewide public services. But if we just look for now at your, on page 2 of 8, you'll see that this shows the continuation from the current service level. And there's the inclusion of the one enhancement that the governor had on the first, at the top of page 2 of 8, $400,000 roughly as a roll-up of classified compensation amount. That then lists the governor's recommended budget there in the second box on page 2. His recommendation is for $80,600,000 and roughly $17,000 in general fund for these programs. The adjustments that the co-chairs are recommending is, first of all, the denial of the classified top step compensation, which is the taking out that roughly $400,000 that the governor put in. And then the new research programs, which are detailed on this document over here, which come up together to a total of $12,850,000 of enhancement. So the proposed budget for all three combined would be $93 million in general fund, which would be about 15.45% above what the governor's proposing, about 16% above the current service level, and about 22% increase from the current $97.99 biennial level. Those are the general fund dollars only. As you can see, there are also, if you move across to the right here on page 2, at the very bottom where it says proposed budget, there are also $46 million in other funds. The other funds come from federal sources. Although they are federal funds, they're accounted as other funds here, and they come from various fees and services that the statewide public services are providing. In the case of the extension service, there are extensive county funds that come in this category. So there are these funds. There are also the non-limited funds, $83 million, which are basically the competitive research grants that are to a very large extent from the federal government as well, that the faculty members of the three statewide public services are competing for and are being awarded. So the total budget, looking at the total expenditures for the 2 years, would be about $222 million in the next 2 years.
Representative Jensen. And Representative Nesher, did you... You're correct.
If I could just follow up. Go ahead, kind of just thank you very much. That's very helpful. But what it shows is that there's a shift from what lottery funds to when you look at the total funds, there's been a shift there from probably lottery funds to general funds. Is that what I'm reading?
Representative, currently there are $750,000 in lottery funds in the budget of the statewide public service. I believe that's all in the experiment station. And these were one-time funds that were taken out in the development of the current service level. All of the new funds that are being added in the order of close to $13 million would be general funds.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if we're the same or the others. We're adding substantially here, proposing to add substantially to the staffing with the research programs. Have you run any sort of projections as to what change there might be? Can we expect to see some growth in the other research money coming in to the university because of this activity that we're proposing here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, the answer to that is yes, and the reason that I can answer so affirmatively to that is our previous experience and the previous track record we had for bringing in outside research grants and contracts. 2 years ago, the Agricultural Experiment Station had about $25 million a year that we were bringing in research grants. This past year, we're up to about $30 million. And that is with almost no increase in faculty. If you look at the overall experiment station operation, you will notice that almost 60% of what we do is from grant and contracts and other funds. So essentially you could say conservatively that each dollar invested here would create about a 50% increase, or about that many dollars in other funds. Now, our federal funds, the line item funds that we get from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, is fairly flat. So you could subtract that out. But even so, I would say that somewhere between the same amount of funds or slightly less than that, you could expect. Even our branch experiment stations, as you're aware, run about 50 to 60% of their whole operation out of outside grants and contracts. And a lot of that comes from the industry itself. The wheat industry puts in about $500,000 a year into our research operation out of their own pockets. That goes for almost all the other industries that we're dealing with.
Mr. Chairman, I may add, Representative Jensen, in the Forest Research Lab, and you will find these figures in the booklet that we provided for you in hearing for our base budget before this committee a couple of months ago. The Forest Research Lab's base budget is 80% from grants and contracts, and we leverage the state funds 6-1, actually 6.2-1. And that's really the best of any of the forestry research programs in the nation. So we're going to leverage the funds you provide us considerably, I would expect, based on, as Dane says, the track record.
First, Jim Johnson.
Just a note on that, Mr. Chair, and I think we need to seriously take this into consideration as we look at this budget, that it has far more. It will generate far more money than what we're actually putting into it here. So,
well, Representative Jensen, I was writing while you were asking your question about the multiplier factors. it's not just the multiplier that brings scholars to the research facilities, but it's the competitiveness that's impacted and improved in the private sector producers. So, you know, we always think that we're spending dollars to keep from eroding the base. We're actually trying to keep that competitiveness and build on that base. So I think there's more to it. The multiplier is a great thing to look at. Other questions for the panel or on the budget? Substantial King, other questions?
I'd appreciate getting a laundry list from whatever the appropriate source and its staff in terms of the sources of the other funds. I don't think we've really seen that. I'd kind of like to know whose money it is and how much we're spending, you know, from what pocket.
Actually, I think the university itself is probably the best source. If you look at that pie chart of it, we've seen before in these presentations, it's amazing how little direct investment there is and how great the investment from other sources is. But I think
that'd be appreciated. It was the easiest way. And then the other thing is, on that roll-up denial, I just wanted to get clarification. Are we denying the next one or the last one?
Actually, I think we're moving from column A to column B, is my understanding.
Perhaps I didn't explain it quite as well as I should have. This is an enhancement that the governor is proposing, because what it would do is it would provide additional state funding for salary compensation changes that were adopted prior to the last session. What happened was, in a little bit more history on this, is that in the 1997 session, higher ed came to the legislature and requested that the general fund be used to fund a portion of a compensation change that was implemented for classified employees in the prior biennium, which was to add an additional step to their compensation. As you know, classified employees have contracts where they have steps, and as they move and get additional time, generally the employee is moved to a higher level of compensation. In 1995, the legislature passed Senate Bill 271, which was a Higher Ed Efficiency Act, which allowed higher ed for the first time to negotiate contracts directly with its classified employees, whereas prior, these negotiations had been through the state, through the Department of Administrative Services. And what higher ed did was they requested 271 in order to be able to achieve administrative efficiency, and they used some of their efficiency gains to help finance an additional step that was added for the classified employees of higher ed that were not negotiated statewide for all employees. And the system requested that general funds be added to that, this is last session, be added to pay for a portion of those increased costs. And the legislature in 97 said no. They said that Senate Bill, your Higher Ed Efficiency Act, the purpose of that was to allow you to achieve efficiencies and lower costs for the state. And if you are able to finance additional compensation, you can do that, but you should not come back to the state then and ask for the state to pay for those additional compensation.
In other words, the efficiencies were to fund the higher ed increases.
Right. So in 1997, the legislature said no. This biennium, the higher ed requested again a second time, and the governor agreed to our request to again have the a portion of these additional costs financed by the general fund. And the education subcommittee, when it reviewed the largest portion of the higher ed budget, the education in general functions, again said no, and said that the Higher Ed Efficiency Act was meant to allow the institution to achieve cost savings, and it was not the purpose of that act to allow, you know, in granting the authority for higher ed to do its own negotiations with its employees to then bring about additional costs. to the state. So it turns out that these the classified employees are employed or funded in the budgets of both the general higher ed budget, which was passed in 5022, and these three statewide services. The component that was equivalent in 5022 was about $2.4 million, if my memory serves me correctly, and that was also denied earlier by the legislature in 5022. This is the portion of those compensation costs that are in the other budgets. But these are compensation that have been funded now for more than one biennium. And it's just a request that general fund be added to pay for part of the compensation costs. It was an increase over the current service level. And our recommendation is to deny these as they were denied earlier last legislative session.
Does that help, or are we deeper in the swamp than we were earlier?
I can follow up. So I think I just heard staff explain that the denial of the classified step compensation is an enhancement. And that but it sounds like this is the persistent denial of the persistent roll-up. We're just doing it again.
I can understand that.
If it works for you, representing it's a better
Further questions?
Sure, we're in work session.
We are in work session, but I believe Senator Musker for the first time today has been.
Could they tell us in the 97-99 period just what the cost savings that were achieved?
So, bring your fiscal officers with you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, the cost savings that were achieved overall for higher education, I think, was discussed in front of the education subcommittee, and I think there are some people from higher education that might be able to address that. Essentially, if you look at some of the cost savings that we've had, have generated additional grants and contracts. If you look at the efficiency of our operation here in Oregon compared to the efficiency of other agricultural experiment stations across the state, if you look at the number of grants and contracts that we bring in and the amount of self-funding that we do of our operation, we rank fifth in the nation. And that compares people like Purdue University, Ohio State University, Iowa State, Texas A&M, University of Florida, the sort of biggies, those that most people would think were fairly efficient. As George mentioned, he's number one in the nation relative to that factor. So it's a bit difficult for us to go in and say because of the Higher Ed Efficiency Act, which is focused mostly on all the rest of higher education, how much of that comes from agricultural experiment station. Some of it comes in how you manage the motor pool. Some of it comes in how you handle the grants and contracts. Some of it comes in how you hire people, whether you hire them on part-time employment, like a postdoctoral fellow who's going to work for 1 or 2 years versus hiring somebody on classified employment who goes into the classified system. So there are a number of those efficiencies that allow us to do things differently. Our purchasing, it has allowed us more flexibility in purchasing, doing our own contracts relative to where we purchase scientific equipment, which is quite different than the rest of Department of Administrative Services. So those are essentially the areas where we in the Ag Experiment Station have benefited, and I imagine that's similar for the other agencies. But all of higher ed has those same efficiencies that I think have been created by that act.
Mr. Chairman, I was just curious as to in dollars and cents, what that has been accomplished for us. A little better handle on what it's done and what should or should not be included in addition.
I see Mr. Cairns' training is meant in the direction of the microphone. Mr. Cairns, do you have something that you wish to add to this to answer Senator Metzger's question?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Grad and parents up in the university system, Senate Bill 271 required when passed in 1995 to have an independent study made of the cost deficiencies that were captured as a result of its passage. That report was delivered to you earlier this year and documented through that study around $7 million in cost avoidance and cost efficiencies. The result of which was to honor the university system's pledge to admit at least 2,000 Oregon undergraduate resident students on those savings. They accomplished it by reaching around 2,165 admits in those undergraduate residents on those cost avoidance and saving 71. And they can those are continually saving biennium to biennium.
And now they're facing a strike. Failure to pay their workers. It's a real good deal. That's why I want to get it on the record.
For the question, Senator Trano.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to get this thing across as soon as I can. I need to understand a little bit more about the process. We got dash two is to adopt.
We do.
And I will move the dash two is to help clarify the process.
Committee, you've heard the motion to move the dash two amendments to House Bill 5057. Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'll also move the, to accept, let's say, fiscal officer's suggested budget package as outlined by LFO.
The motion, colleagues, is to accept the LFO recommendations, and that would include the denial of the roll-up cost and the others that are included on the spreadsheet that were presented. Questions to the motion? Objections? Senator Perper?
Mr. Chair, I'll support the budget, but I just want to raise the objection that we're once again shooting in the dark with no co-chair's budget having been exposed and 140 days into the process. The enhancements are great. I voted for 413 in the Natural Resource Committee, but I'm very concerned that we're playing this game of chicken and this one goes up for sacrifice like a lot of the other budgets because we don't have the whole picture.
Senator, I share your concern. I hope that the negotiations that are ongoing in this building to close on the budget happen in a timely fashion and we can all get a better level of comfort with you. But I appreciate your support for the motion. Further comments? Call the roll, please.
Senator Tarno.
Aye.
Senator George.
Aye.
Senator Metzger.
Aye.
Senator Corcoran.
Aye.
Representative Westbrook.
Yeah.
Representative Jebson.
Aye.
Representative Messerly.
Aye.
Representative King.
Aye.
Representative Morgan.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye. Motion passes. House Bill 5057, as amended, goes to the full Ways and Means of the Duke House. Recommendation, Chair will carry to the full committee. Need a current chair also business?
Or you could do that as well.
Chair will carry in the Senate and House carrier. Representative Johnson will carry in the House.
Thank you.
Okay, we're out of work on 5057. And before we close the meeting for today, a couple of the members of the expressed concern that not all the issues that were important to agricultural community have been dealt with in the budget, as we said. And our staff from LFO indicated we started somewhere around $22 million and ended up with about $13 million worth of enhancements for these budgets. And if there's an opportunity to work the various agency budgets, we'll revisit some of these questions as we go forward. And it may be just a matter of redirecting some resources. So we'll be very cognizant of that issue, and we'll ask the committee's cooperation to help do that.
Mr. Chair, I will close the meeting with you. Maybe we can have a sales tax, Mr. Chair.
Sales tax, Senator Corcoran. Let the record not be.
For agriculture.
Oh, for agriculture.
Agricultural research sales tax. I think it applies.
With no other business to come before the committee this morning, Congress, you have about a half hour of free time.
What do you do with that?
the tape. So, that's the